Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, headquartered in Bismarck, a Touchstone Energy Cooperative, producing reliable electricity for 141 member rural electric systems in 9 states.
Welcome to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm your host, Craig Blumenschein. My co-host, Ashley Thornburg, is out today. In the second half of today's show, we're set to give you a sneak peek at the University of North Dakota's Aerospace Day. The event is this Saturday and is open to everyone at no cost, offering attractions for all ages, including the thrilling experience of flying in a flight simulator. Additionally, the Fargo Police and Fire Department are actively looking for new recruits eager to pursue a career in public service. And Rick Gione will transport us to the ballpark in his latest edition of Prairie Plates. But first, we'll introduce you to Adam Brockman, an exceptionally talented musician and composer, currently a senior at Davies High School. Adam has earned the honor of performing in an upcoming episode of NPR's From the Top. A special segment titled Musicians from Rural America is set to be released nationwide starting April 29th and will be broadcast right here on Prairie Public on May 5th. Adam, welcome to Main Street.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You betcha. I'm really happy that you're here. How did you begin this process of ultimately being selected to play on From the Top?
Well, it started out last summer. I was doing my Eagle Scout project over at Discovery, and the orchestra teacher at my high school was there, and she told me that NPR had emailed her and asked if she had any students who were composers and had written a piano piece. So I spent the next couple months before the school year composing, and I wrote 2 piano pieces, and then I applied for the show. I had to submit my 2 compositions, tell them a little bit about myself, and answer a few questions. Honestly, I had forgotten about it for a while. They took a couple months to go through all the applicants, and then when they emailed me a few months later, I was really shocked. I didn't really know what to expect after reading the email, because as we got closer to it, I learned more. And
well, I want to congratulate you again, and we're going to give our listeners a sneak peek of your work here in just a moment, Adam, but I want to know more about you. When did you start playing the piano, and then when did you realize you were pretty good?
Well, I started playing piano halfway through kindergarten.
Kindergarten?
Yes. But I didn't really enjoy it until 6th grade. I had kind of just gone through the motions of learning what my teacher told me to. But then once I got to 6th grade, I started playing what I wanted to play. I played things that I enjoyed. Specifically, my mother would always play a piece, Canon in D, and I made it my mission to learn that piece. And then after I learned it, it was just like I couldn't stop. I just kept learning pieces that I thought were fun to play.
And what about the composition side of your world? When did you start writing your own music?
Well, honestly, I started writing right away. I found some old videos on my YouTube channel when I was 12 of some compositions I had written. They weren't amazing, but I didn't even remember writing when I was that young. It wasn't until sophomore year, though, that I really got into composition. I wrote a lot for piano, but then I started to expand, and I wrote more for chamber music, music that I didn't know, and most recently, I've written for larger works like symphony orchestra and wind band.
Is it harder for you to perform, or is it harder for you to compose?
There's a pretty big difference. It's definitely harder for me to perform. Performing is, you get one chance to show the world what you have to offer. All the preparation goes into that one moment. It's a lot of pressure. And with composing, it doesn't matter where I do it. I could do it in my bedroom whenever. People aren't wondering, how long did it take you to prepare? How long have you worked on this? They just look at the product that you've offered. You can spend time working on it, and you can show people your best work.
When you're composing, give us a sense of, or give me a sense of, how that process works. I know when I write, and I used to write a lot, I would have a process to think about that which I wanted to say, then I would say it, and I would go back and say it again until I thought that it was as good as it was going to get. How does your composing process work?
I start by improvising on the piano. I find a melody that I like. If I'm writing for solo piano, I'll honestly sometimes just keep exactly what I had improvised. But if I'm writing for a larger work with instruments other than piano, I might find a melody that I like, put it on a couple of instruments, and then from there I almost work through it like a mathematical equation. I give the background chords to some instruments like the brass. I harmonize everything. I think about the bass. And it's really an interesting experience because you kind of solve your own problems that you create, and it really is a good way to show emotion and how you're thinking through music.
I'm guessing that you do this in a high-tech world, very differently than your predecessors did decades ago.
Mostly, I work with just scoring. There's a lot of people that do online music production with DAWs, but I haven't really explored that yet. I definitely will have to in college. But honestly, so far, I've really just done notation. I use a program called MuseScore 4. I really like it because the MIDI playback is outstanding, and I'm able to see what it would sound like when it's played in real life.
You have selected some clips that you want to share with our listeners, Adam. Set up the first clip for us.
Sure. The first clip I have is a composition I wrote this last summer for solo piano. It's more of a jazz contemporary style, but it's something I've worked on for a while.
Adam, once you create a piece like this, what do you do with it?
Well, I play it a lot. I play it everywhere I can. I show my teachers, and I really think about what I can do with it. Around early this year and last year, I searched as far as I could for all of the composition contests I could find, piano contests, everything. And I submitted it to everything, everything that I could.
How was it received?
It was received very well. I went to the Medora Piano Camp with Dr. Nariaki Sugiyara from UND, and he actually asked me to play both of my compositions for the ending recital. I thought it was a really fun experience, and I was surprised he let me play them, but I was very happy with it.
You talked about improvisation. Is that a skill that is just fun and assists you in other ways with your music, and if so, how?
Absolutely. Improvisation is one of my favorite parts of being a musician. Once you know enough music theory and enough how the instrument works, you're able to just sit down and play anything. That's honestly how I compose. I just pick a key, I pick an emotion, and I just play whatever comes to mind.
Do you have other instruments that you're very interested in to play besides the piano?
Yes, I play piano, bass guitar, drum sets, and I just started tenor saxophone. I'm not amazing at it, but I play it.
Adam, this second piece that we want to share with our listeners, set it up for us too, please.
Sure. So for this piece, I listened to the jazz standard Misty, and I did my best to play it by ear. It might not be a perfect representation, but I like to play things by ear and improvise the chords.
Do you have a favorite genre that you like to play?
Particularly. I like romantic era classical music and jazz, but I can't really pick which one is my favorite.
Adam, how do you continue to learn? Are you still taking lessons? And how does that process work for you, for someone who's already really accomplished?
Yeah, I'm still taking lessons for piano. But something that I've noticed has definitely changed is I've been spending a lot less time practicing piano and a lot more time composing. You can't do both to the same level. You have to choose. So I've chosen composition. And while I still definitely will practice piano, I'm actually, one of my majors is piano performance. I think that I will divide my time favor in composition.
How does it work for you being a senior in school now with your music? You have orchestra classes? Do you have classes where you practice on your own? Are you able to give it as much time as you would like with the other, all of the other things that happen with high school seniors?
Most of my classes are actually music. My mom isn't too fond of this. I'm not taking a math or a science this year because both of my majors next year are music and music business. And I'm taking mostly music classes. I'm taking composition. I'm taking all three jazz bands, sort of, and I'm in band. So in all of my, I have three off periods, and in most of them, you can find me in the practice room composing or practicing. And really, it gives me a dedicated time frame to practice and compose.
Just want to tell our listeners just a little secret here. Your mom is sitting right next to you in the studio.
Yes.
Oh, you're not telling anything out of tail here. How many folks in your school are interested in music relative to other things? Is this something that is becoming again more popular or maybe even waning in popularity?
I'm always shocked by how many students are in music. There are so many students just at Davies in music. We have three jazz bands, and in the first jazz band for newer players, it's the size of about three jazz bands. There are so many students interested in music, and I think it's almost a shame that the public has not appreciated music in schools as much as I'd hoped.
You talked about wanting to study the business of music. Where are you going next year?
So next year I'm going to Augustana University in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm double majoring in multimedia entrepreneurship, which is music production with business and marketing factors. And then I'm also majoring in piano performance. I'll learn all the steps of music production from composition all the way to business classes. I'm actually also getting a minor in business. So I think in this new age of music, people going into the industry need to understand the business and marketing to make it. So I'm making an effort to learn the business side of the industry too.
I almost don't want to ask you this question, Adam, but I feel that I need to in today's world because I'll bet you've thought about it. What about AI and music? Does that concern you?
A little bit. I mean, I think there isn't a career that you can't be scared of AI. Music particularly is interesting because so far AI hasn't made that much progress in music. It's really easy to pick out the emotion in music, and it's just not the same coming from somebody who's not a human. I'm sure that it'll adapt and change and improve, but I see AI as a tool that we can use in our future to cut down on some steps that might just be unnecessary.
As someone who's about to make this transition from high school senior to college freshman, when you look back to that sixth grader when music finally just grabbed you, what advice would you give yourself back then?
I would tell myself to not put so much pressure on myself. I always told myself that I needed to be the best. I always told myself that I needed to do certain things. When I set my mind to a goal, I would stop at nothing to accomplish it. I would spend summers practicing piano all day, even forgetting to eat, which is not great. I would just tell myself that as long as you're passionate about music, you will get there. You don't need to sacrifice other parts of your life to do what you want to do.
I want to tell our listeners too, Adam, you didn't come here this evening. We're recording this in the evening in Fargo from music practice. You came from track practice.
Yes.
First of all, what do you run?
I run the 800.
How do you balance wanting to do things like that, wanting to have some fun, like you were talking about telling your sixth grade self, still with this desire to be really good in your upcoming profession?
Balancing it has always been a little tricky, also because there's a lot of extracurricular music activities, both in and outside of school. I do my best to make it work where I can, but honestly, I have to make a few sacrifices. This year in track, I'm missing a couple of meets for honor bands, but really, I've noticed that just by talking to the coaches, they're really eager to work with me. They're just very happy I'm on the team. I think just as long as you talk to the coaches or whoever, you can find a way to do both and make it work.
If I were going to ask you right now, Adam, what your biggest challenge is today with your music, what is it?
I think my biggest challenge right now that might become a bigger issue when I go to college is that I'm not where I'd like to be for producing music online with DAWs, D-A-W-S. I've really only focused on notation, which is more classical. But if I'm going into the industry side of music production, I'll need to be more fluent in using these online programs to produce music.
We're really enjoying our conversation with Adam Brockman. He's a Davies High School senior, and he's been chosen to perform in an upcoming episode of NPR's From the Top. That segment will be titled Musicians from Rural America and will be released nationwide on April 29th. You can hear it right here on Prairie Public on May 5th. You are going to be with others, and you've had a chance, kind of, to meet the folks who will also be performing with you. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so twice a week we have these Zoom sessions where we talk with people from NPR, and they talk about different aspects of the music industry. Two times they brought in guests, and we were able to ask them questions about what it's like to be in the music industry. And these are successful people, so it was really a great opportunity to ask the questions that I had. And we did some other activities talking about our future and other things that we can expect when moving forward.
Do you think you can make a career of music, Adam?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think that it's definitely risky, but I realized that I really have no other option. It's the only thing that I want to do. My old piano teacher told me, don't go into music unless you can't imagine yourself doing anything else. And I honestly, truly cannot imagine myself doing anything other than music.
What did you take from the other performers that will be performing with you in that upcoming episode of From the Top?
I've talked to them a little bit. I thought all of them were extremely kind, and I was kind of shocked at the variety of the instruments that they played. There were a couple harp players, there was a banjo player, and there was a fiddle player. As a pianist, I wasn't expecting to see such a variety of instruments. It was a really amazing experience.
You told me before we started this interview that your ultimate goal is creating a score for a movie.
Yes, that would be the dream.
Tell me what you think about that will require and how you may want to get there.
Well, I should clarify, it's not just a movie score that I could. I'm really open to doing anything for the commercial industry, whether it be movies or TV shows, games even. I just want to have my works used in another format where I can show them to the world easier rather than staying in just music or classical music. With composing for other media aspects, I was surprised about how orchestral it can be. When you listen to movie scores, they're extremely orchestral, and that's really helpful for me because I'm a classical composer. So I really don't need to stray out far outside of my preferred region of composition.
As we end our conversation today, Adam, we're going to go high-tech on our listeners here. And it's composed with this file type is what I would call it. You're going to call it something different. It's a MIDI composition. Artificially created music with synthesizers and things. Is that the right way to look at it?
Well, sort of. So I composed it. So the piece that you're going to play is my first piano concerto for symphony orchestra and solo piano. I wrote all of the instruments separately. And then this program will take my notation, which you could give to a performer, and they'll simulate how it sounds with an online MIDI.
So tell me, tell me what a MIDI is.
It's an online representation of what an instrument may sound like when played in real life. It's not always perfect, but the program that I'm using, I think, is one of the best.
Adam, this is just really, really beautiful. Could you do this 2 years ago?
Absolutely not. It's taken trial and error and countless failures to get where I am today. I have failed so many times I can't even count. When I first looked at an orchestral score, I was so terrified of it. I had no idea what I was doing. And for this first piece, actually, I wrote it for two pianos and then converted it to a symphony orchestra.
Have you been able to share this with an orchestra to perform live?
Not yet, but I showed it to some of the professors at Augustana University, and they said that I might be able to play it. So I'm really excited.
That would be very exciting. Adam Brockman, he's a Davies High School senior, and he's been chosen to perform in an upcoming episode of NPR's From the Top. The segment will be titled Musicians from Rural America and will be released to the nation beginning April 9th and performed here on Prairie Public on May 5th. Adam, you're very gifted. Thank you so much for joining us on Main Street.
Thank you.
More Main Streets ahead. Stay with us.
Debate season is here, and Prairie Public will host a pretty big one for this part of the world. It's the Republican primary contest for governor of North Dakota. I'm Dave Thompson. Join me and the candidates, Congressman Kelly Armstrong and Lieutenant Governor Tammy Miller, Tuesday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain. You can listen on a radio, a smart speaker or app, watch Prairie Public television service, or stream online at prairiepublic.org. Prairie Public's Election 2024 coverage is made possible in part by AARP North Dakota.
In this episode of Bird Note, or should I say Bird Noir, the private eye gets a call from H. John Benjamin about unusual wild turkey behavior.
This is Bird Noir. I'm Michael Stein, private eye. Wild turkeys are real city slickers nowadays, strutting around parks and lawns. But sometimes, they act a little strange.
Hi, Michael. Problem. John Benjamin here. This turkey, he won't leave my car alone.
Your car?
Yeah, I just chased him off. A big male tom turkey showing off his tail feathers. He was tapping his beak on the car for hours.
Ouch.
Oh my God, hold on. He's back. He's circling the house and staring in all the windows. Is this turkey hunting me, Michael?
Probably not. What do you think the tom sees in your windows?
My terrified face?
He sees his own reflection. Wild turkeys are breeding, and the toms are looking out for rival males. His mirror images on the shiny car in the windows look like another turkey.
You're kidding. Is there anything I can do?
Sure. Just cover up your car and coat your home's windows with some soapy water to make them less reflective. That way your car stays safe and the turkey stays focused on courting. My favorite cases are the ones that end well for both the people and the birds. I'm Michael Stein, private eye.
Michael, he got in the car. He's driving my car away. The turkey just stole my car.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Fargo-Moorhead Opera, presenting Puccini's grandest opera, Turandot, featuring the gorgeous aria Nessun Dorma. Princess Turandot seeks a husband, but the lucky man must meet her challenges or be executed. April 12th and April 14th at Reinecke Concert Hall. Tickets at fmopera.org.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
Coming up on Main Street, University of North Dakota's Aerospace Community Day and the need for more firefighters and police here in Fargo. But first, this news.
Want to improve your relationships with colleagues and clients? Consider the benefits of unique perspectives and ideas. Entrepreneur Chloe Valderi developed Theory of Enchantment, a diversity, equity, and inclusion program that utilizes pop culture. Through film, music, and literature, you can learn how to embrace and create a more open-minded workplace. You can join Chloe Valderi and Humanities North Dakota on April 18th in Fargo for an unconventional approach to DEI. More information online at humanitiesnd.org.
Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, pleased to be joined by Courtney Olson from the University of North Dakota. Courtney is a marketing, events, and project coordinator in the Dean's Office, the Aerospace Dean's Office. Courtney, welcome to Main Street.
Hello, thank you for having me.
We have an exciting day coming up this Saturday, April 6th, at the University of North Dakota, really celebrating aerospace. First of all, Courtney, where can people go to begin this day? And then we're going to get into the details.
Yes, so they can come to the University of North Dakota, the end of campus that connects University and 42nd. Odegaard Hall, Clifford Hall, Ryan Hall, and Robin Hall will all have check-in tables. The first 500 kids will get a free t-shirt.
That's awesome. What age group is this really designed for, Courtney?
Really, it's for all ages. We'll have something for everyone.
Adults included?
Yeah, absolutely. We are going to have our sim bay open so anyone is able to come and try flying an aircraft.
Oh, that sounds fun. Give us an overview of all of the different activities, Courtney.
Sure. So within the aerospace school, we have four departments: aviation, atmospheric sciences, earth system science and policy, and space studies. So for aviation, our flight operations out next to GFK will be open. We'll have some aircraft on static display with an airplane contest, coloring station, a photo booth, and some of our partners from GFK are going to bring over some snow removal type equipment.
Let's not use that anymore, though, this spring, Courtney, okay?
Yeah, right. We don't want to do that. For our atmospheric sciences department, people will be able to come and give their shot at predicting the weather in our broadcasting studio. And that is located in Ryan Hall next to the aircraft simulators. And then Earth System Science and Policy will be working with a lot of environmental sides of things like bees and seeds and pollinators for the area. And kids can come and learn about sustainability. Let's see, our space studies, you'll be able to come and sit in a spacecraft simulator, which is also in Ryan Hall. And we also have our spacesuit lab, which will be open for people to come and look and try on parts of a spacesuit.
This is all free, of course, at the University of North Dakota, Saturday, April 6th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's celebrating aerospace. Courtney, there are also buses going from the campus out to the airport. Is that right?
Correct. So from Clifford Hall, we will have two buses that will be on constant rotation between our campus and the flight operations at UND. And it'll just take people back and forth. We don't recommend driving out to the airport to park, so we do prefer everyone comes to campus to hop on a bus just because of limited parking out there.
And if I can't make it, Courtney, right at 10, that's okay. I can show up at 10:30, 11 o'clock and still
absolutely
take part in exhibits. What inspired this event, Courtney?
So back when we had our 50th anniversary as a college, our group came up with the idea of hosting a pop-up type science museum. And so we did that back in 2018, and it was a surprising hit for the community, and it was just nice to kind of get people in the door. A lot of people don't realize all that goes on over here and how many hands-on activities that we really do have for students that are looking to get into the aerospace industry.
If you were to tell me the most popular, I guess, exhibits or two that you'll have for us, what are going to be the big hits?
Definitely flying the aircraft simulators.
I would crash it. Is that okay?
A long line. That's okay. We'll have some flight instructors with each of the aircraft to help you out.
And this is something that kids and their parents can do, maybe kind of like a family thing.
Absolutely. The aircraft sims, I remember when my husband brought our daughter and she just sat on his lap and they both enjoyed it. So really, 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds, they can kind of have fun. They might not remember it later on in life, but they can still come and enjoy it.
What's the aerospace passport, Courtney?
So upon entry at any of our registration tables, kids will get this mini passport, and we have about 22 different activities for the day. And as you go to an activity, you can get it stamped. So on your way out, you can pick a prize.
You have some sponsors that have really helped you, and go ahead and let us know who they are.
Yes. So Rydell is a dedicated sponsor of this event, and without them, our free shirt opportunity would not be made possible. So we are greatly appreciate the partnership that we have had with them. And then Cirrus is also a great partner to us as well. And we have a limited number of bags, like backpacks, that we'll be handing out at the door as well, thanks to Cirrus.
This is really an educational opportunity. When young people come, Courtney, what are they most surprised about experiencing these things on a university campus and then maybe starting to think about, boy, there could be a career opportunity for me here.
Absolutely. You know, it's really cute, actually. A couple of years ago, I remember we had a couple kids come in like mini spacesuit costumes and aviator outfits to be, you know, pilots. And it's just kind of cool to see how young they kind of aspire to be those things and then to be able to come here and actually check out what they might be able to get themselves into for when they get to college. And so it's just a great way for us to kind of open that a little bit sooner for them and let them, you know, see what all we can do.
Courtney, between now and Saturday, where can people go online to learn more?
If they go to the UND Aerospace Facebook page, we have created an event, the 2024 UND Aerospace Community Day, and we are posting daily updates in that event. And we've got a picture of what the free shirts look like. Later this week on Friday, we're going to be posting the map and a link to a Yap app where you'll be able to download an app and kind of follow the map on your phone, but we'll also have a printed map and a PDF that people can save ahead of time.
Wonderful. The event, of course, is this Saturday, April 6th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the University of North Dakota. Courtney Olson, she's the University of North Dakota Marketing Events and Project Coordinator in the Aerospace Dean's Office. Courtney, thank you so much for joining us on Main Street. Up next on Main Street, the Fargo Police Department and Fargo Fire Department are actively searching for dedicated recruits to join their ranks and contribute to the safety of our community. We'll delve into the application process and explore the comprehensive paid training opportunities available at their academies right here in Fargo. Pleased to be joined by John Novacek with the Fargo Police Department. Welcome. And also Justin Werlinger from the Fargo Fire Department. Justin, welcome.
Thank you.
Talking about recruiting needs, and especially for first responders, each of your departments have a need for recruits. First of all, tell us the need, first from the Fargo Police Department and then from the Fire Department.
Yeah, so Fargo Police Department is accepting applications on a rolling basis, meaning that 365 days a year, we pretty much have an open application for one of our two academies. Currently, the push is to get people on board for our academy starting this summer. It'll be starting June 3rd. It's really not a cap on the number we're going to take. We just want to get as many people who are interested in the door and ready to go.
Justin, how about the fire department?
We work a little bit different. Our application process is open once a year. We currently open Monday, April 1st. We're going to close on Friday, the 12th of April, so you have 2 weeks to get in right now. The easiest way to do that is join fargofd.com. That'll have all our information on there, but that's where you're going to start your application process if you're interested.
Tell me about the need from each of your departments. John, you first for the police department.
We are looking for individuals who have that strong desire to be servant leaders for their community. As far as numbers go, that one's kind of hard to stay on top of. So we really want to start, as far as the hard number goes, I want to say we're 6 or 7 spots that we have currently available. But the reason that we want to hire as many as we can is just to backfill positions that are likely to come up, whether it's somebody who, mostly it's planned retirements. We just want to make sure that we stay on top of that.
Justin, what's the need for the fire department?
We have a lot of the same needs. We're looking for a lot of the same people, team-oriented. We're actually opening Station 8 in South Fargo. That's going to open this fall. So we currently need 12 to 13 people just to fill that station. So that academy will start July 8th. There's a possibility we could have more in there, but that's kind of what we're looking for right now in this April push is that academy that's going to start July 8th right away. We'll have 12 to 13 people in there for that.
What are the physical and mental qualifications to do either? First, you, John.
So as far as the physical fitness side of things goes, we get that question quite a bit. We work every single day, every week during our academy to get our academy students where they need to be. Maybe I'm not as in shape as I used to be. I need a little bit of work in that area. We will help you get to that point. But ultimately, the goal is to get you to pass the state standard physical fitness test. It's called the MPAT. People are interested, they can look up videos. It's essentially an obstacle course that you have to complete for time, but we work through that all the way through. And the psychological evaluation is something that takes place during the hiring process that you have to pass as well.
Justin, how about fire requirements?
It's going to be very similar. Going to have to be able to do some physical labor. That's kind of what our job is. Most of our stuff, again, is going to be taking place in our paid academy once you get offered a job. We do have a psych eval. We'll have a background check. All of those things will happen pre-hire once you get a conditional job offer. But a lot of those things we will. Our agility test is something we're trying new in our academy this year instead of testing it beforehand. We're going to test in our academy. So much like PD, we're going to try and we feel pretty confident we can get you where we need to.
There are age restrictions on someone who wants to become either a police officer or a firefighter?
Yeah, so for the police department, you've got to be at least 21 years of age or older by the time you're sworn in. So if you're going through the summer academy, that one typically graduates mid to late August, early September. You just got to be 21 by the time you're sworn in.
Fire?
18. Have to have a GED or a diploma, and then we don't have any college requirements, just have to be 18 years old.
I want to ask each of you the difference that you make in the community. If I were to ask you that question, John, you first, what would you tell me?
So that's a really interesting question, and I think I can just reflect on what got me into law enforcement. So I started my career as a park ranger, and I remember one time there was a search and rescue operation where this boat capsized, and so they called the law enforcement rangers to go rescue him. And they had to make that call when there was no one else. There was no one else coming. And they had no one else to rely on. And that's essentially what law enforcement is. You know, we handle things from routine crashes all the way up to the worst day of somebody's life. And so we're that difference maker. We're the solution specialists. We're the ones that come in at the last minute and when you've got no one else to turn to.
Justin?
We consider ourselves an all hazards department. So we have three specialty teams, hazmat, technical rescue, and water rescue. We're EMTs. All of our firefighters are EMTs. Actually, there were three CPRs yesterday alone in the city of Fargo. We've had quite a few more fires. So we're trying to protect that property and lives from fire loss, as well as any of those medical things. A lot of the times we work with PD. There's a lot of overdoses in our city that we're going to deal with on a daily basis. So we kind of work hand in hand with our stakeholders like PD and Sanford Ambulance together to do what the city needs us to do.
I think that in the news, mental health of first responders has been top of mind. How is the support for mental health for people that are considering this as a career or a vocation, and they might be a little concerned about being in real tough situations?
Yeah, so we have implemented at the police department a lot of check-ins for things like that. So we have mental health screenings on the annual. We have physical training as well, or physical evaluations. And then we offer a lot of support. So we have a peer support team. You know, if you need to talk to them, they're trained to specifically help you deal through something you're struggling with. I've used them several times. It's just really helpful.
Justin, same on the fire side, good mental health support?
Yep, we actually work hand in hand with PD with our peer support teams because we're on a lot of the same calls. We have a critical incident team in the state and in the city as well. We also take part in the health screenings that John's talking about. So that's mandatory once a year. And what they've done, we can use it more than once a year, but they found specialists that are used to dealing with kind of the things that we're going to see, the trauma, the kind of the things the average person isn't going to have problems with that we may. So they're specifically geared towards public safety.
One more time, each of you, why should someone consider serving?
So if you are looking for a career that's not mundane, something that's different every day, either one of these jobs is right for you. And if you're interested in joining the police department, you can go to joinfargopd.com, find all those resources there.
Justin, one more time, where can people learn more?
Joinfargofd.com, same thing.
And you would both agree the need is now?
Absolutely. You know, take advantage of a paid academy on both sides, right?
Correct.
Benefits.
John Novacek from the Fargo Police Department, Justin Werlinger from the Fargo Fire Department, both of you, thank you for what you do, thank you for your service, and thank you for joining us on Main Street.
Thanks for having us.
I like bagels.
Have some salad.
All I eat is pizza.
And the music means it's time for Prairie Plates, and that's walk-up music. That must mean we're talking baseball. Rick Gillen joins us.
Good to be with you, Craig. Yeah, we're talking baseball foods this week.
I like that. I have a routine, Rick, when I go to the ballpark, and my routine means that my wife has to pick up my food. I go to the ballpark, I get my bag of peanuts and a drink before the game, and I'm not leaving my seat. So my wife's in charge of going to get the good stuff, maybe for a seventh inning stretch meal or something like that.
Well, hot dogs are great, and there's a lot of things that make a good hot dog to me, and we can get into that a little bit if you'd like.
What do you put on your hot dog?
Well, I'm kind of a kraut and mustard guy. I don't like ketchup on hot dogs. And I know kids like that, but I don't. When you get a little older, I think you like the traditional kind of German mustard and kraut sort of thing. But I won't say no to a chili dog or some of those other things, Coney dogs, that sort of thing. A Chicago dog I really love.
I like ketchup and onions on my hot dog, and I leave it at that. Hamburgers. And, Rick, I was trying to think if I've ever had a hamburger at the ballpark. I've had brats, I've had hot dogs, I've had nachos, but I don't recall ever having a hamburger at the ballpark.
Yeah, you usually get them in that foil wrapping. That's why I say they kind of need to be traditional so you're not stuffing a bunch of things in there. Just cheese, pickles, ketchup, mustard, that sort of thing. Just keep it simple with that so you can kind of eat it with that foil around it so you can not make a huge mess. But I enjoy a hamburger once in a while. But, yeah, hot dogs are the I think that the ultimate food at the ballpark.
The other thing I've started to see are these plates of fries just smothered in cheese, nachos just smothered in cheese. Man, people really go to town when they're at the ballpark.
Yeah, nachos are great, too. I mean, you're gonna get a little messy there, but, yeah, I mean, nachos are great. Chili cheese fries, all of those things are great. I can't imagine sitting at my seat, though, watching a baseball game, eating chili cheese fries, drinking a cold beverage, something like that. It would just make too much of a mess to me, especially if you're sitting on kind of the sidelines and you get a line drive. And, yeah, it could be a disaster zone. But sunflower seeds are great, salted in the shell. Peanuts, I really enjoy those. Cracker Jacks, of course. And cold beverages from breweries around the state. I've been seeing local beverages at local baseball stadiums and stuff like that, like Laughing Sun from Bismarck, Junkyard Drecker, and Summit in the Twin Cities is very good, too.
Blue Moon, made at Coors Field. That was where it was developed.
Man, a good Blue Moon, a little orange in there, that's a great drink, yes.
Back to peanuts. My wife and I always have this argument. So one of the things that you can always find, it seems like, from a sidewalk vendor on your way to the park are peanuts. That's one of the things that they like to sell. And my wife always says, nah, buy them inside. And it's just like, why? Why should I wait to buy the peanuts and just get them right here? But we always have that little debate when we're walking up. And then I always get criticized for the mess I leave with this in the shell peanuts. But man, are they so good. And they just fit for me at a baseball game.
Yeah, I just want them now. I mean, if they're selling them, I just want them now. I'm here to see a baseball game. I'm kind of like you.
We're going to talk about some specific stadiums, but I have not been here long enough to know whether an American Legion ballpark has good baseball food, if even some younger Little League or Babe Ruth-type age ballparks around here in their concession stand have good food. I need to go on a baseball journey here and figure out where a good dinner might be in the summer.
I need to go with you. And, you know, baseball teams, minor league around the state, well, of course, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, that's probably the most prominent one. But the Bismarck Larks, the last few years, have definitely been making a name for themselves. And a new one is the Minot Hot Tots. Their mascot is actually a flaming tater tot. They started last year, so it's a new team, and so we'll be keeping an eye on that. But I think around the state you're going to see just regular kind of ballpark fare. Here in Fargo-Moorhead, you'll get like taco in a bag from the taco shop, Hawkeye Taco. Hawkeye is the mascot for the Redhawks here, and they've kind of developed this special taco that's like a double-decker taco or a Taco Bravo called a Hawkeye Taco. So that's kind of special here in Fargo. But we can get into the Minnesota Twins a little bit. They have a plethora of items. And our friends at NPR came out with a story yesterday talking about some of the new items at Target Field. The headline is Birria Tacos and Fried Oreos. See Target Field's new foods and drinks for 2024.
Sounds like a state fair.
Oh, yeah. And Kramarchuk sausages, that's a iconic outfit in northeast Minneapolis, Ukrainian. It's a deli. It's a meat market. It's all sorts of stuff. And they have sausages, hot dogs, corn dogs, barbecue, burgers, brats, fried chicken, wings, but a lot of ethnic food, Mexican, Vietnamese, Indian, and a lot of vegetarian options. And they really try to make it diverse, like the population in Minneapolis-St. Paul.
In this area, we've been to maybe, I would say, Rick, since I've been here, maybe a dozen or so FM Red Hawk games, and their concession stand is always great. One thing that I miss this thing called the beer batter. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, anything in beer batter is good, Craig.
So, and Billings, the Billings Mustangs have a minor league team. While we were watching, they had, and we've probably been to a half dozen of their games as well, a beer batter. One of the players was designated as the beer batter. If the beer batter gets a hit, until the inning's over, beers are a buck. The last two times, Rick, that we went, our beer batter was 4 for 4. That might tell you a little something about the adult beverages served that evening, but it's just a lot of fun.
Wow, that's a good day.
Yeah, yeah, they were great days. If people have not been to a minor league baseball game, they're just fun. You know, the food certainly adds to it, but there's just a lot of fun going around for everyone.
It is. It's local. It has that local vibe. You really can get into the just cheering for that local team, yeah.
Of all of the different names of hot dogs and other things that you've listed, I think I want to try a bomb dog someday.
Well, bomb dog is usually a street vendor here in Fargo, and it's actually quite good, and you'll find him late at night in the summertime, primarily around Dempsey's, but usually on Broadway, and his hot dogs just have a bunch of stuff on them, and they are good. Well, I did want to mention the Dog Mahal Dog House up in Grand Forks before we get into some other stuff, but they have a record shop, Ojeda Records, in the same location, same owner, and they probably have the best hot dogs in the state of North Dakota. And that's debatable. If you want to debate, you can send me an email at plates@prairiepublic.org. But it's really a neat store, a neat shop, and the Fighting Hawk hot dog looked really good. It has taco meat, nacho cheese, onions, green chilies, and Fritos on it. Next time I'm in Grand Forks, I know where I'm going to go.
So we're 6 days removed from opening day. Rick, did you have a hot dog last Thursday?
I did, actually, at Dempsey's. I had a Billy Dog, which is nacho cheese, coleslaw, and chili on they use Vienna beef hot dogs at Dempsey's. They're quite good. They have nice snap. And the key to a good hot dog, too, is it's kind of a steamed poppy seed bun. I really enjoy it.
Bun's a big part of this, yes.
It is.
Rick, remind us where we can find you on Facebook.
I run a big Facebook page called Fargo Moorhead Eats. It's a big group. Or you can email me at plates@prairiepublic.org.
We've been eating with Rick Dionne. Prairie Plates. Rick, thanks for joining us. More Main Streets ahead. Stay with us.
This is Dakota Datebook for April 3rd. Until the early 1900s, people traveled by real horsepower, the kind fueled by hay. Then, the automobile began changing American life. In those early days, driving was something of a free-for-all. There were no stop signs, traffic lights, proper lanes, brake lights, crosswalks, or speed limits. No driver's license was necessary. Pedestrians crossing the street had to dodge any passing cars. One account stated, screaming pedestrians were scattered like ninepins. Some were bowled over or tossed against storefronts. There were far-sighted people at the turn of the century who predicted that automobiles were the transportation of the future, and it was important to impose some sort of order. In 1914, the first traffic light was installed. The first stop sign was introduced in 1915. Poor roads were a big concern. Few were paved. Most roads were alternately dry and dusty, or wet and knee-deep in mud. There were no paved roads in North Dakota until 1910, when Grand Forks began pouring cement. On this date in 1903, it was announced that a National Good Roads Conference would be held in St. Louis. It was billed as the greatest good roads convention ever held. Observers expected that a main focus would be federal financial support to improve roads. Supporters of federal assistance pointed out that the government had funded the construction of railroads owned by private corporations, while public roads were just that, public. They would be used by everyone. Communities across the country would benefit by improved mail delivery and the transportation of goods, as well as the improved ease of personal travel. The push for good roads got the attention of the national government. A 1904 road survey determined that while there were over 2 million miles of roads in the country, only 141 were paved. Today, roads are the economic lifeline of North Dakota, with over 100,000 miles of road in the state. The State Department of Transportation manages about 7,000 miles, with the remaining roads coming under city, township, tribal, and county management. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
concludes today's edition of Main Street. We are deeply grateful for your company. Tomorrow, we'll dive into an innovative approach of cultivating empathy and combating racism through online gaming. Our guest, Chloe Valdery, the visionary founder of the Enchanted Games League, will share her insights. Chloe's visit to North Dakota is a highlight of the Brave Conversations series presented by Humanities ND. Don't miss this enlightening discussion on Main Street tomorrow. We look forward to having you with us.